Blog Talk Radio.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Yo! Bless the love and greetings. Yeah. Here comes the musical thing called Bring Your Queen, I like your machine. Oh, yeah. Pull up, hey, I love the vibes, I know the rhythm, my job. But men are coming at the dance shop. Music is all we got. Now we must defend it.
Dance club, no need no war.
Man and woman so far,
everyone is a star.
Making life on Mamma Mia.
Dance club, the people say.
It's where everyone's gathering.
Need no bothering.
I just love. So everyone must come together. Everyone that come express themselves.
Them dress to impress.
One black love, one African respect.
Well, I say pull up, the talent is from the top.
The music on the street, but check the message at the back. In come the musical thing, I'll bring your queen, I'll lock your block. And the truth and the nuts to us, so chat.
Dance all, don't need no one.
Man and woman for part. And Mamma Mia,
dance,
the people's church. Yes, it's where everyone's gathering.
Need no bothering.
I just love. So everyone must come. I know the rhythm of charm. And Taxi Gang is on the attack. Yes,
Rory has the control tower. Rhythm driven every hour.
Dance on, no need no war.
Man and woman to part.
Everyone is a star.
Lighting up on Mamma Mia.
Dance on, the people's church.
It's where everyone's gathering.
Need no bothering.
I just love. So everyone,
rock on to me.
Everyone,
even me.
Everyone,
bring in your queen.
Everyone,
music to me.
Everyone,
must come together.
Everyone,
come together.
get from the top. The music hard, but look at the message that I got. Ain't gonna make the God sing up in the queen and lock your clock. The truth, man, the duck, and the suicide. The black side of the building, and we rule the in top. And when we come, my dance, I know we're not the top. And love is in the art, I tell you, joy is what we got. And I let her, and I let her, if you tell you that.
DJ Spider, big respect, man. Anna, book. DJ Spider, big respect, man. Anna, book.
Come around me, I grip with me, I look for me, get it by the phone. Listen to you, come around me, I take a little shot and pass it around.
Just one on right in a Babylon chupa. Officer, what kind of chum shot that? Make you sweep it down at the mat. Strangest thing just happened to me. Babylon locked me up with just 1 ounce of Cali. I'm a musician that's just to fold my maid. Regents and regents tell me, wouldn't you all agree? Cruising up the highway, coming from the field. Lights up and slip and then I heard a siren. Police pulled me over, turn on them high beams. Said them searching for coke and morphine. Listen to me clearly, I'm saying what I mean. I don't smoke coke, herbs is my main speed. Pop out them big gun like them think me would have scream. See them time I woke up from a dream. Strangest thing just happened to me. Babylon locked me up with just 1 ounce of Cali. I'm a musician that's just to fool my baby. Regents and regents tell me, wouldn't you all agree? Pick up on the farm, I'm on way out in the west. Just want for the seed and reap the good test. Babylon, I find it just another test. Now we run the world, so we must have a protest. Doctors and lawyers, they use it too. Police and soldiers, you know that's true. No matter with the roadblock and the curfew, just with the curb and the set.
Myself and another gentleman from my local unit, the West Mountain Rangers, Montana, out of Southwest Montana. We arrived on Tuesday morning at 7:30.
And have you had to? What have you been doing so far? Just kind of setting up camp, or?
When I first arrived, Cliven was just glad to see somebody that wasn't afraid to carry a firearm around, and he's kept me pretty close to the hip ever since then. Mm-hmm. You know. These guys aren't scared. They just understand the inevitable situation that they're in based on history and how the authorities act in all of these situations. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been coordinating with militia across the country to support their movement to this location in order to meet the Bundy and the militia community's objectives.
Do you have some more questions? Sorry.
Talking about, but this is a bigger issue. I mean, a lot of people are taking it as a bigger issue. So,
I want to quote Mr. Bundy at the town hall in Overton the other night. He said that the goal here is to restore the Bundy and the public's family's rights to life, liberty, and property. Their lives have been greatly affected by this. They have incurred, physical injury because of their stand. Their liberty to use the land that they've possessed, their family has possessed water rights to for the past 120 years has been infringed, and the public's access, especially the people of Clark County, has been infringed to these public lands, and their property has been stolen by the federal government, and all three of those things need to be restored. That is their pledge to pursue the restorance of that, and Operation Mutual Aid is going to do everything in our efforts to facilitate the patriots from all over the community supporting that.
So you would say this is Cliven Bundy versus the BLM. This is really him just doing this for us, so to say. This is the public body. It's much bigger than him.
Yes, and he's very aware of the impact that all of this has, as are all of us. One thing I want everybody to know, the character of this man is unmatched. The things that I've heard him say, the private conversations that I've had with him. This man is likened to George Washington in my eyes, and say that is no small statement. They're a deeply religious family, very large family, and very cohesive. And they will not stop until they've restored their right to life, liberty, and property.
How do you see this turning out?
I don't want to make any premonitions as to how this is going to turn out. That's in God's hands. But I will say that what we want to see is everyone leave here safely. And in order to do that, the public land must be restored to the public, and the property of the Bundys that has been confiscated must be returned to them.
We interviewed some of the people down there, and a lot of them were concerned, too, that the representatives weren't showing up.
And the response has been a lot better from people just coming here to support the Bundys by physically being here.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got dedicated men, as I said before, that have vowed to place themselves in between the citizens that have showed up to support the Bundys and the people that have threatened their lives.
Thank you.
What would you say to the people out there who are saying that the Bundys are trespassing on federal land? What do you have to say? Even Senator Harry Reid came out and said that. He's defending the BLM.
Yes. The Supreme Court has ruled that the citizens are the sovereign in America. The state is not the sovereign. The federal government is not the sovereign. The citizen is the sovereign. You can't trespass on the citizen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now to understand the struggle, to understand pain and dues, and the pain of my people, your people, all around the globe, you gotta feel me, it's in the music, use it.
What you know about juggling jobs and struggling hard and chasing dreams? What you know about having no car, rent being due, and no blame made? What you know about sacrificing all your wants for all your needs? What you know about loving your child just to find out that ain't your
need? My pain.
Dodging them cops to make ends meet.
Survive.
What you know about the lights being off, the gas being off, and no food to eat?
Down and down.
What you know about Goodwill clothes, while your friends dress fly in junior high?
Yeah.
What you know about Grandma's words when she said,
one day, boy, you gon' shine?
No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
My
you think you know
my struggle.
Hello. Hello. Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, the Blog Talk Radio. Got a headache today thinking about the NAACP. And it was just like true surrender listening to them. Because they already got paid. And they want y'all to keep the crap down. So I did a little checking on said NAACP. Let me see if I can find that site again. Wow. NAACP has got like $12 million. Right now, in easy access cash. Sister Renee, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Let me get my information back up here.
Okay.
Man, because when I saw that thing about the NAACP having that $12 million, my system started screwing up.
You and your system.
Yeah, I started having problems with all these damn computers. The NAACP has got like, I think they had like $12 million they're holding on, you know. Or that's what they bring in a year or something like that, you know. Either way it go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see what they're doing with the money.
Right.
And to go ahead and
right.
stand up and say, hey, look, we forgive this dude for saying all that crap he said. Oh, yeah, I found it.
Yeah.
That don't make no damn sense to me. I mean.
It doesn't.
I've been called real crazy a lot of times. And, I got an excuse. I'm a veteran. I can be crazy.
You said you're a what?
I'm a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces. I can be crazy.
Oh, okay. Legitimately, huh?
Yeah, you know, hey, give me medication, I'm all right. But the NAACP ain't helping us at all.
No. You know, I mean, I was just like, none of this has really surprised me. But honestly, I did expect more from them. But this was before I knew that they had already given him an award and he was, you know, going to get another one in May. That's before I knew that. So, you know, once I knew that, then I was like, okay, well, it makes sense. You know, of course, they got to protect their neck and they got to protect the money that they're getting from him.
Right.
And, you know, we know that the organization was started by Jewish people, and I believe he's Jewish as well. And, you know, they got to keep the circle tight.
Man, that's crazy. Well, he's a good Jew.
Yeah.
He ain't no good Jew. No, man, y'all, ooh, that's pathetic, man.
I mean, you know, I mean, nothing really surprises me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad that we got to that point.
Yeah, you know, so that's what it was. That's what his buddy with him because he had money.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh,
you know,
yeah, definitely.
That's why they call him the good Jew. Oh, he's not like the others. Oh, don't worry about them. Them just jokes.
Right.
You know, so they ain't about shit.
No.
And I was, I couldn't even finish reading. I was trying to still find that article, but on what that guy was saying on the NAACP. How'd you even say, man?
I was doing a little research on it earlier, and I found a comment that was saying that the NAACP has never stood up against abortion. And I was like, wow, you know, and to know that we've had something like 13 million black babies killed, you know, since 1970. And I'm like, they never spoke out against it. I mean, I never really thought about it until I read that. And I was like, wow, that's very interesting. And again, it shows you that these organizations that are supposed to be for helping the black community, how are you helping and supporting the black community and supposed to be standing up for injustice when you never speak on abortion and the fact that that's taken out so many babies before they even get here?
Yeah. They ain't never said nothing. They ain't never really put nothing out there, have they?
No.
And you, every news conference that they do, it's all controlled. So you probably wouldn't get them questions. They gonna screen you up front anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You ain't gonna get to go in and ask that kind of question. They gonna walk away from that one. Oh, well, that's it. It's the same thing when you ask. Yeah. I want to see where that money's at. Because they got land and all this other stuff. And I had a thing on their salaries, because I remember this, the dude Jealous, Ben Jealous, was bringing down, I think he was bringing down like $6 million, $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
How can you justify getting paid like that?
Well, you don't have to. You know, at this point, they're going strictly based upon the name recognition alone. So to hear the NAACP, that already, I guess, is supposed to lend some, you know, validity to whatever. So when you hear, like, this person is working for the NAACP, you know, a lot of people probably won't question that. I mean, you know, a lot of us do who are aware, who are what I consider awake, not sleepwalking, but it's a lot of us who are sleepwalking. And they're not going to question, well, what do you do? Well, what have you done? You know, where is the evidence? So, you know, they really don't have to explain.
Oh, no. Oh, I got it. It says revenue, contributions. Contributions, gifts, and grants. Oh my! Its income statement is $18 million from that. Federated campaigns. They get another almost $400,000 from that. Oh my goodness, man! What that money? What they doing with that money?
I don't know.
What are they doing with that?
You're gonna have to try to find out.
We need to find out how they get it and what they doing with it.
Right. I mean, but that's a protected organization. They don't, that's why I'm telling you, they don't have to explain anything. They're standing on a foundation of what maybe they used to do or their old or former reputation. They're still standing on that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that, because you don't really see them out front doing a whole lot of stuff. But I'm stuck on that page, man. Let me see if I can put it in the chat room so, you know, anybody come up, check that out, man, because that's wild, man. Yeah, it's called the Charity Navigator.
Mm-hmm.
I heard somebody talking about it earlier.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm not even.
Yeah, because that one there, that's when I really started looking at a few other groups too, man. Like the Urban League.
Mhm.
Another flaky group. But still, on here looking on this site, they don't. It's like. They got like 31 million dollars in total revenue.
But this is good that you have this show, that you're bringing these type of things up. And, you know, even though I'm just, you know, co-hosting with you, but this is, you know, this is really like my, I'm not going to say my dream, but my intention or something that I would want to do with participating in a show is to, when you find things out like this, you know, let's try to find out what's going on. If it's, you know, getting a petition together, you know, where is this money going? What are these organizations doing for the Black community? What is the NAACP doing? What is the Urban League doing? Are there jobs? Are there, is it assistance for people? Have they handled any real racial issues? And I mean, we see already with this thing that they did nothing. So, I mean, I think this is a good opportunity since you found out the information, you know, to even take it to the next step. Because a lot of times we talk about these things and it's good to be aware of it. But we also, you know, we need these people to answer, and they should have to answer.
They ain't going to answer. They're going to keep running from it. So we got to figure out a strategy on how to get to them.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, and they will, you know, they have all kinds of loopholes, and they have lawyers and, you know, people that they work with who know how to work the system. But at the same time, you know, when you have the public who can have, if you can have some type of solidarity with enough people, then you can try to find a little something out. We can, you know what I'm saying, get the word out a little bit. If it's cracking that door open a little bit, because we need to know, like, what's going on? Where's the money?
Get it. I want to hear from you. You know, you're a sports fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
So would you have done what those Clippers players done?
No. I think Well, I think it was ridiculous to turn their shirts inside out. Like, I do not know what this that represented. And me and my dad was arguing.
They're wearing the shirts.
Well, me and my dad were arguing about this the other day, and me and him were talking about it. But he was thinking, oh, well, they did that, and you know, that was their stand. I'm like, who came up with that? Like, that was an awful, quote-unquote, stand to make because, like you said, you're still in the shirt, okay? You're still showing up, you know, you're still present, whether you, you know, cover the name up or whatever, you're still there. And I would like to think if I was in that position, I mean, of course I'm not, but I would like to think if I were, that I would be like, you know what? I'm not going today. I'm not going to practice. I would have to hit up my lawyer. I would have to see what's going on, what procedures I could do legally. I would have to talk to my teammates. I would have to talk to other players that I know in the league. I would have to, of course, talk to my family. And I would have to put something together that I felt was a stand. And from what I saw them do, I think it was very passive.
I think it was kind of weak.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it was weak?
Because there was no, I mean, it looked ridiculous, but, you know, you got to stand on principles and morals, and so there was nothing moral about them doing that, and there was, their principles are real fucked up. You're supposed to turn and walk the hell away.
Yeah. And that's what it should have been about. You know, if you did show up, you should have walked out or something.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't have showed up, at all.
Should have watched it on TV. I'll have a good time over there. You can disrespect me like that. You know, fuck you.
Right.
Now hang out.
Right.
I don't think you should have did nothing like that. I mean, people break contracts all the damn time.
Exactly.
See them go ahead and rewriting stuff and putting little stuff in there. Let's slide this and do that and redo. And fuck that. It ain't shit. But they were pretty much justified in going ahead and walking out with that ridiculous nonsense. Go ahead and show you what kind of people we out here, man, and what we got.
And you know the other night, the conversation. And so
right.
You know what I'm talking about, and you know that there are some black people who are, oh, my goodness. I call it a slave mentality, okay? You know, there's a lot of us who, depending on the issue, we have that element of the slave mentality. And the thing about it is, you know, in some ways, people can't help, some black people can't help but to feel that way. Because unless you really had that real awakening and you're not sleepwalking, you know, you kind of get stuck in that because this is a system we came up under was, you know, derived from that whole slave mentality. So if there are black people who was arguing me down, okay, and just, you know, saying that they shouldn't do anything and, you know, it's their money's on the line and the contract, and they don't want to break their contract, they're going to end up poor and broke, and nobody's going to pick them up and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, so at the end of the day, what is worth more to you, your integrity or to stay stuck in that slave mindset? You know, and unfortunately, like I said before, black people, not all of us, of course, but some of us, we sell out so easily. We're easily bought. Easily bought.
I think, and being easily bought, there's, you know, a lot of people don't really believe this, but they're strategically placed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got one because you'll constantly hear or see references to, oh, we got one over here. One of you guys over here already, you know.
Right.
Oh, you know, they kind of slowly put that out a whole lot of times, man. But got to stay on top of it. You can't be surrendering like the NAACP and Al Sharpton and the rest, man. That's what's making it worse for us.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just saying we're not getting that no respect at all. Can't build mm-hmm. nothing. Can't build industries and stuff. We got all these restrictions or underhanded, undermining, sneaky fuckers try to go ahead and tear it down.
Right.
So you know it's kind of hard, but you just don't give up. Don't surrender.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Ain't about that.
But yeah, I mean, I was disappointed, you know. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was, but I wasn't. But, you know, I guess what I need to realize is not everybody will think like me, because my feeling is if it's logical, I'm a very logic-driven person. So if something is logical sense, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and you show that to somebody, 1 + 1 = 2, and, you know, I have to understand not everybody will see that as 2. You know,
mm-hmm.
some people will
oh,
see
yeah.
it.
You, they, ooh, 1, no, 1 and 1 and 2, no, that ain't right. You can't be right.
Right.
You didn't, no,
right.
You didn't, no. Yeah,
exactly.
I hear that a lot.
How did you get that? Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's logical, you know, they don't want to hear that. You know, they'd be like, okay. You'd be like, what the fuck do I have to do, yo, crazy ass?
Exactly. You know, because a lot of us, you know, in our community, we thrive off of emotion.
Right.
And, you know, the thing about that, though, is emotions change. Logic never changes, pretty much. If it's this, then it's going to be that. You know what I mean? But emotions, that goes up and down. You know, that changes minute by minute.
Right.
And so to me, even in this situation with the Clippers, if they thought about it logically from a standpoint of, you know what, this was wrong. Okay, it's emotionally wrong. We know that. But if they said, you know, this is wrong, what he said, and we need to make a stand on that. Okay, so what could we do to let them know how we feel about this? But to me, I feel like the emotion was more so that they better get out on that court, you know.
Right.
And they were fear, you know, they had that fear that if they didn't get on the court, then, you know, whatever else would happen.
Strategically placed, I told you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Strategically placed. Okay.
Do you have the chat open?
Yeah, it is.
I can't find it.
Oh, that is messed up, man. I'm telling you, man. I got some problems with this.
Oh, my goodness. What is the thing? Is it your you said it's your computer?
I don't know, man. I got something crazy going. Yeah, my chat room's open.
Okay. I'm trying to see. Because I didn't see it, but... You on Blog Talk, right?
Right.
Okay.
Trying to locate another crazy articles about this guy, man. Cause I got enough. I think this pretty much says it all here. But you got to go ahead and look at that. I had another page where I had the amount of property that they own.
Mhm.
And in some places they rent. And you know, what I found out, I think a lot of local chapters have to raise money on their own with the NAACP. I was hoping my guys called in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I got one guy who got a lot of inside information about them. Oh man,
okay.
He has a lot. I wish he had called in, so because I also wanted to give him check out his show, because at one time he was doing stuff doing shows, trying to tell everybody to burn their NAACP card.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up almost 2 weeks worth of information about what they're doing and how they're doing the money and what's going on and how they run their whole organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so I'm looking at this charity navigator, and I see that, hey, they pulled down some money, though. You know, but it's what's going on with that money? What they doing with it? I don't see exactly what they're doing with it.
Right.
As you see, expenses is program expenses, administrative expenses. You know, so, but I don't see what they're doing with that money. And your neighborhood's still messed up. Same black folks still messed up. It's just like a few years back when they squandered that Texaco thing, you know, they caught the executives making a lot of racial comments, negative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse Jackson stepped in to help with that, but NAACP, they got a hand in it too. You know, it's too many issues with them, and this is just the latest of the nonsense from this guy.
Right.
Real quick, I'm trying to find another one of those clips so you can go ahead and hear them. But we got...
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah,
Charity Navigator?
Did I see what?
The Charity Navigator?
No.
Oh, here. Let me play something for you real quick while I find this other stuff. So I get used to this system.
There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here.
Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, the house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them Shetlands nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. Field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro. Our government. I even heard one say our astronaut. They won't even let him near the plant. And our answer.
juggernauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind.
Just as the slave master of that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negro in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts to. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and curse, you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. There's nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one, resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meat. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf, and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be Ethan Stephen.
Oh, greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. Sister Renee.
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you understand what he was saying in that?
I did, but I was kind of in and out. But, yeah, I heard what he was saying, definitely.
I think it's gotten a whole lot worse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard part of what he said, when he said these good white people or this good white man or whatever, that same thing is exactly what I feel about this situation and so many others that happen. I feel like a lot of black people are on this whole good white folks. You know, type of thing. And it's like that because they try to make us not, I put it like this, those in power, okay, want us to feel like, black people to feel like it's a post-racial society and that as black people we have all the same rights and liberties as anyone else and that we can make it like anybody else, if we work hard enough and or have really adopted that ideology, and they don't look further into it, whenever you have something like this happen, or even with Paula Deen, what she said, it's like people are so shocked because they're like, these good white folks, these are good white folks. They like black people. And, you know, because we got a black president, we're all equal. We're all humans. You know, I can't stand it. You know, I can't stand when people say that. We're all human beings. Of course, I mean, that goes without saying. But anyway, but people are on, a lot of people are on that. And it takes for something to happen to shake people up a bit, like Trayvon Martin situation, Jordan Davis. I mean, people eventually go back to sleepwalking, but some people stay awake after, you know. But it's like when that stuff happens, it's like, oh, my gosh, what do you mean? You know, it's like the world is crumbling.
And then the pulpit pimps step in, and, oh, my goodness. Then they come on in, and they're like, hey, well, we getting on it with you. Pretty much, you know, just trying to calm you down a whole lot, you know. So it,
right.
It helps the rug because they'll go ahead and show, the media go ahead and show, well, we had a protest and this rally here from the NAACP, and what is it, about 5 or 6 people standing out there?
Right.
So, they ain't in there going ahead doing nothing. Their biggest thing is just fundraising and making money. It's a money-making operation. You know? That's all it is.
Absolutely. I had pulled up that your link you had put in there. I was like peeking at that.
Right.
But yeah, that's my thing, Chef. You know, and I'm gonna look into that, and I'm gonna get back to you on that. But I would love at some point to do some things like this, where we break some stuff down, we see, you know, what's going on, you know, something that we can do about it, you know. And like you said, I mean, it's not that we can do something, but at least we can try, you know, we can go in that direction because, you know, something like this, this is something we deserve to know. We do. We deserve to know, where is all of this money going?
We can talk to them. But, you know, that's why I wanted to go ahead and have those local cats in, you know. I'm really disappointed in that. The one guy I know, he really gave a lot of information on what they're doing and what they're not doing and what they represent. I believe so he had called in. But the thing is this, that website right there pretty much said enough for me.
Right.
Because I'm not... Ain't never been no real big supporter, and I don't like this whole thing about the people going ahead watching them on TV, and they got those few people, and they go ahead, oh, man, look, the NAACP out there speaking on our behalf. That's bullshit.
So from looking at this, I mean, and I'm just because I'm on the phone, I can't really all the way get into it, but just from glancing at it, it looks like, so everything, not everything, but most of it, comes from contributions, gifts, and they say grants, but later on it says government grants, 0. So they
didn't
don't
you
pay
see
any
how much
membership.
People giving them money?
Right. They don't pay any membership.
Right.
Do, you know,
right.
Fundraising events, 0. So how is that possible that you have no fundraising events?
How do they stay afloat?
Right.
And then you go ahead and look at that thing. I want to go ahead and see what they're talking about, the administrative expense. You really don't, they don't really break that down. That's for them to get paid.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're not doing any type of fundraising event and you have an organization that thrives off of contributions and, you know, then what the heck is going on? You know, related organizations, 0.
Who was paying them? People like this damn racist was paying them, so that's why they gave them, wanted to give them an award.
Right. And see, he did that. He did that to make himself look better because he's already known as being, you know, racist or being prejudiced or whatever you want to call it. He's already known. Yeah, you know, he's already known for having lawsuits and these type of dealings on things. So in order for him to look better, And just to have that, you know, just to have that award, you know, on his reputation was a good thing, you know, in the sense that he's already known for being a certain way, you know.
He got his I Love Nigger Award. Yeah, I love niggas. Look, I got one. Got the award up there. The niggas love me.
Right. Right.
Ain't no damn way.
Uh-huh. But people were talking about that he, you know, I call it slave. Him a slave master, too, because he did exactly the same identical thing to these guys that slave masters used to do back in the time. And when I say identical, I'm just meaning in the same, it's just in a different way. But he has a black woman, okay? Whatever she's mixed with, she's black, all right? So he's got a black woman who's good enough that he can have sex with her, sleep with her, whatever, and buy her these things and gifts and cars and property. Okay, because we know the slave owners, they love some black stuff, okay? They would put their wives to the side, and, you know, they would sleep with, you know, the slaves often. Okay, and then you have the players. They come in as the slaves in the field. You know, they're out there making the slave master money, right? They need to be out there working in order for him to make his money. But don't think just because he has, you know, relations with black women and that he has black people working for him, making him his money, that he will have any slight little ounce of respect for you otherwise. You know, once that's over with, y'all off the court, and you done made my money for that game, don't come around me.
Let me tell you what somebody was telling me earlier. They was this guy, he's black. He was telling me, mm-hmm. I got a problem with that. She wasn't supposed to be recording that conversation. She wasn't supposed to go ahead and give that to nobody. That was a private conversation. She wasn't supposed to do that. I was like, man, are you serious?
But see, what
you
I just
talk
saw
about
on the news.
Oh my goodness! I was like, hold on, man, I can't believe you said that. What does that
you
have
know,
to do with that? I didn't understand why that. What that had to do with anything. My thing is this: if he said it then, maybe she got fed up with him saying so much shit like that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Other people who go ahead and heard him say stuff. This guy's been a racist. All these guys like that for years.
Right.
Maybe she just go ahead and had enough of it. And she found a way to go ahead and say, fuck it, let me get some revenge. And she's going to get paid. So what the hell? I can't really blame her for going ahead and getting paid on this one.
Exactly.
I can't.
But I think that's a distraction, too. I mean, personally,
mm-hmm.
I don't care. I really don't care about, really, I'm not going to say I don't care about the whole thing, but I really kind of don't. Just because in the sense of I'm not surprised, you know, I'm not shocked. Like some people were that this happened. And when the story first broke, I didn't even pay attention to it for like 2 days until I started hearing more people really, really talking about it. And, you know, as far as her recording it, like I said, that's another distraction to try to come up with the whole scene behind it. But see, the thing about it is on the national news, they were saying tonight that there was a third party there. So it was him and her talking, but there was a third party involved, and the legal counsel involved, I guess with those involved, are not releasing that person's name. That the name of the person, who the person is, will not be released. So I guess the implication is that the third person is the one who recorded this conversation. I guess. Good. What I've got to tell you too, what cracked me up.
Oh man,
is,
really? They got to figure out a way out for this. This good. This guy,
right.
He got money, so he can buy his way out of this one.
And my mom called me even on this she called me even on this. They said that, or she said, or her lawyer, rather, I guess, said that whatever her name is, I'm not sure her name at the moment, but she never had a romantic relationship with this man.
What
now,
does that mean?
Mom,
what does that mean?
Right. So my mom was like, how the heck did you not have a romantic relationship with this man? And he was buying you cars and a Bentley, and he got you this $1 million, you know, apartment or whatever, property, all this kind of stuff. And I said, but mom, you have to listen to the wording. You have to remember, this is a lawyer who said this. Listen to the wording, a romantic relationship. But that's not saying that she didn't have sex with him.
Right.
You know, that's the question. That's the key. Because if you go and get a prostitute, you're not having a romantic relationship with her. You're having a sexual encounter, and you're paying her for it.
It was business.
Right. It's business. And that's what that was.
Come on, girl. Get paid. Get paid,
but,
baby.
You know,
go ahead and make that damn money. What the fuck, man? That shit crazy, ain't it?
Yeah, it is.
Goodness gracious. Well, we stooped into this. Right, how much lower can it go?
I don't know. I really don't know. I
is
don't
there a bottom?
Knowing.
Is there a bottom?
Ooh, good question. I'm gonna have to think on that one for a good while, for maybe a couple of days on that. Cause is there a bottom? I mean, you would think that the state of our community, you would think that's a bottom. You know, considering, you know, our kids and their educations they're getting in these black schools, the neighborhoods, the violence, and, you know, the prison. Oh, my goodness. I think now it's one in every two black men have been locked up in their lives. So you would think this is the bottom. I mean, what, you know, 13 million babies aborted since 1970. Like I said, you know, huge numbers of HIV, you know, what, 80% single mother rate. I mean, what more, you know? And not to say that some people aren't doing well and succeeding and, you know, taking care of their families and all of that. Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of us doing that, and they need to showcase that more, but of course they won't, and we don't have our own media really. But again, we still have to look at, and I don't mean to say it this way, but we still have to look at the least of us as well to see what's going on with us, because it's all a part of us. So when you consider it in that way, I'm like, okay, is this not the bottom?
Yeah, how much lower can it go? Well, yeah, that's rough. Got to think on that one myself. Let me play something for a quickie. This one.
Gotta keep it low, keep it low. She says he gives you everything, a big house and diamond ring, but he doesn't satisfy all your needs. Oh no, I only want the money to do the things he doesn't do, whatever it may be.
issues with this system.
Right.
Wasn't able to function well.
Okay. That's what it is.
Hey, I want you to tell me more about that being human thing, because I really wanted to get into that, because I was, you know, I want to bring up, you know, where we heard it from, but all the other stuff I've been hearing is just crazy.
When people say that we're all human.
Yeah. That.
Okay.
That thing there, that's disturbing. We ain't all being treated like humans. Why a lot of other humans got more than what we got? How did they go ahead and get that?
Oh, and you know what? I listened to the other day, I think it was Monday, I listened to, for a few minutes, a couple of conservative talk shows.
Right.
And wow. You know, if some of these black people who believe it's a post-racial society and who have that mentality of we're all human beings, man, I'm like, some of you all need to listen to these shows.
That's right.
And that's another thing. Like, I really want for us as a people to get outside of our box.
because you cannot blame people for not, you know, knowing certain things or for them believing we're in a post-racial society when you stay in a box and you watch pretty much the same things, you go to pretty much the same websites, and you stay pretty much in a certain zone, and you don't go out outside of that. You don't travel outside of that. And so because of it, you know, you might have a completely different idea about the world, and many do, you know, than what the world really is. Because if you look at, you know, and this is based on people that I know personally, and even things I did at a certain time, you know, you watch all the shows on VH1, like, you know, Basketball Wives and, you know, all of that stuff, Love and Hip Hop and everything. You watch the Housewives shows and all of these things. So you see on there, on these shows, they typically have a couple of white characters who are so cool. They hang out with, you know, black people or whatever. You know, they interact with black people. And it seems like they just get along so well and that they're so nice and that they're looking at us just the same, you know. And I think a lot of young people, and that's a real sad part too, but older people as well, but a lot of young people, they mistakenly believe that stuff. But what I wish is that more black folk listen to these conservative shows, looked at Fox News, too.
Hold on a minute. Let me throw something at you real quick. See, you know, okay. When they can go ahead and deal with the youth, that means everything else is going to slowly be phased out because of the youth population. It is growing in certain areas. But mm-hmm. you got too many of our kids going ahead and believing in that mess and that crap. So that's why I think that it has to be a stronger push because there's so many of them. So they can be a stronger push for them to get the message that's what's really going on.
Right. I mean, but when you listen to these conservative shows, like I listened to a couple, and the guy, oh my goodness, he was like talking about this issue, a white guy, of course. Well, I'm not going to say of course because I can tell you about a black one, but it was on a different issue, but... he was talking about this, and his opinion was they need to get back to playing sports, what they do. They need to get back to playing basketball and let the people in the office handle the situation, that they are privileged to be in that position because the amount of money that they are able to make and that many people don't get to make that, especially many black people, okay? This is what this man is saying. And they need to get back to playing basketball and let this be dealt with in the business sense. The people who deal with that, let them deal with it. And he was saying basically that these black players should be so grateful. They should be so grateful to be in a position to be on an NBA team, to be professionally an athlete.
Okay, wait.
And
wait.
Have access to the money.
Wait a minute. Because you're about to make my stomach turn. Man, that was enough. Okay, so to be grateful to be on that team and all the other mm-hmm. stuff, but if it wasn't for the black players, they wouldn't be where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So how could that dude miss that point?
Well, he's still there in a privileged position. He said they're privileged.
Oh.
And, you know, that privilege, they need to continue to take it and just let the situation be. And that also that many black people, we talk about racism and things, but from his view, there's not any racism. From his view, it's black people projecting racism in places where it doesn't really exist. And
yeah, that's common.
A lot of times, sometimes we insert race into issues that race has no bearing on. And that, you know.
You know what? It's sort of like, you know, a black guy and a white guy watched the Rodney King beating, and the white guy is like, oh, no, that those beatings are nothing. He's resisting arrest. Beat his ass some more.
Right.
And the black guy wanted to go ahead and whoop that dude ass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and that's the thing is, again, like I said, a lot of people don't watch these things. They don't listen to these things. So when you have Paula Deen come out there talking about slaves and nigger, nigger, you know, and you think this little nice southern white lady said this, she likes black people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, hold on a minute. Brother B.A., your line's open.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Good evening. Thanks, Jeff. How you doing, brother?
All right. How you doing, brother? Greet the sister.
Doing great. Yes, hello, sister. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks. I've been enjoying listening to you the last 15 minutes or so. I had to step away for a moment. But I just want to chime in and say a couple things. First, I know last couple of times listening to your show, it was, you know, it talked a lot about relationships, you know. And, you know, when you get to the Sterling situation, those racist comments, when you really get down to it, it's all about relationships, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody would have called Don and said, Don, man, I saw your wife on Instagram with Magic Johnson and you know, whoever else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Don would have gave a damn. Don Sterling would have said so. I don't care. That wouldn't have fazed him, right? But when they called and said, I saw your side chick, your side piece, hell no. He got enraged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those relationships. You know, the side piece, you know, just the whole thought of even though she's telling him, I'm half black myself. He's like, no, you white. You Latina. You know what I'm saying? See, that side chick, that coochie was driving me crazy, you know?
Right.
And you, when you on the phone and you talking to that type of relationship, hey man, ain't no telling what people say when they talking to the side piece, the other woman, and vice versa. You know, people say some crazy things. They let it all out. All those emotions are raw, and they come out. And that's what happened to old Don Sterling. You know, 80-year-old got a 35-year-old. You know, biracial, you know, and he done lost his mind, okay? And he was always a racist, now. He was just bringing it all out. You know, it was real raw.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, Magic ain't never hurt nobody. I mean, don't bring Magic to the game. Don't bring no black people to the game, you know. So, but when you get down to it, it's all about relationships. Had he been talking to anybody else, and it would have been a racial situation, so to speak, where someone's race would have been had to come up. I don't think he would have sounded like that.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have came across like that. Okay.
So he was sensitive behind.
Right. What you were saying about the players. I heard some of the players in the league wanted to boycott. And some of the Clippers, the L.A. Clippers. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, when you're making that type of money, well, not all of them making that type of money, but, you know, say half the team probably making over $5 million, $2 million, whatever it is. But when you're making that kind of money, I guess you can afford to say, I'm going to walk out. I'm going to boycott. Okay? But had they played, I wouldn't have felt any less about, you know, them for being players because here's the deal. Most black folk work for white, racist white folk, you know. You know, if you know, a lot of us, you know, I know we real proud today, but a lot of, you know, our grandparents and some probably our parents went to work for Mr. Charlie. You know, Mr. Charlie probably was just like Sterling, but we drove Mr. Charlie around, you know. You know, we answered his door, you know. Miss Ann probably was racist, but we cleaned up our house. We took care of our kids. I mean, and that same thing today. You know, you go to work, you're probably working for racist, or the chairman is probably still the same way Don Sterling. Because Don Sterling, you know, he's a billionaire. He real estate mag tycoon in Southern California. So you don't think his partners, they all probably feel that way. When they go to the synagogue, you know, they all feel that way. So, and we work for them.
Oh, my goodness, man. I wish
they could have stayed.
I got one for the clip. I wanted to play, but it won't play. Because I got this one Jewish guy calling Barack Obama a slave. How can America make a slave the president? Oh, that shit won't play, man. I will have it next show. I know it that well. But man, you know, this ain't nothing new with them. All of them doing that. All of them doing that. Even go ahead, sister.
I wanted to ask the caller, I hear what you're saying, you know, that, you know, our people have always worked for races, and we still do. But then what do you think their reaction should have been, or do you think there should have been a reaction then?
Well, I mean, that's a personal choice. As a league, as an association, you know, I think it would have been unfair for one person or two person or one team to boycott, not to play. I think the entire association, the entire union should have got together, said we ain't playing. None of the teams are playing. I don't think we should
That's
put the owners in and leave one person out there like that. But had they had a play, you know, that's what it means to be black in America, or that's part of what it means to be black in America. Having to do things that sort of,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of our legacy. That's what it means to be African-American, having to put up with, you know, shit that you don't want to put up with. You know, that's part of what we have to do. Now, like I said, some of us, we are very dignified, very proud people. So grandma ain't going to tell you all that she had to put up with going to work, or your father not going to tell you what he had to do to put food on the table. I mean, that's what we have to do. Okay.
How much of it are we supposed to be putting up with today? I mean, how much? When do you go ahead and say enough of that bullshit? And we need to do some shit for ourselves.
Yeah, right now, today. I agree. But
you're making excuses though. Like, because we've dealt with this before, and this is what it means to be black. I mean, we can redefine that to a certain level. I mean, we cannot totally redefine it because we exist in a white supremacist system. I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, we can redefine that to a certain extent that, you know what, if somebody comes out and says some racist crap and we know it and we hear it, then we should be doing something about it. You know, there was a time when our, you know, grandparents and so on and so forth, they could not say anything, or they had to do so in such a way. And, you know, but in the time that we are in now, we have more opportunity to speak up about it. You know, I always have the belief that things never really change. They only change form. So even though we're not, you know, in the time of slavery, or we're not in the midst of the civil rights movement, I mean, we're still in all that stuff. It's just in a different way. So when I hear you saying that, it makes me feel like you're saying, oh, well, this is what it is, and that's what it is. And, you know, just kind of putting our hands up, shrugging our shoulders, like, okay, let's go on back and play basketball and keep it moving.
That's a personal choice. For example, I'm calling you from the Washington, D.C. area, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a football team named the Redskins. A lot of people say that is a racist slur, okay? I agree, but that ain't stopping nobody from signing contracts to play with them, you know? and that's what they do. That's their prerogative. And I don't, I mean, just me personally, I don't look down at RG3, their star quarterback, for signing a mega contract to play with them. I don't look at the receiver they just signed from the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, why are you going to play for this racist team? Why are you going to put that helmet on with that racist symbol? You know, or why are you going to play baseball for the Cleveland Indians and they got this grinning Indian, you know, as a mascot and whatnot? Why are you going to play? They got a gorilla as a mascot. So it's like, I mean, we can go down the line, you know, and point out, you know, if I can go to work, you know, my boss, he probably racist. Okay, now do I quit? Do I stop working?
But that's different. How you breaking it down, because you're saying your boss is racist, but it's a, or he probably is racist. But it's a difference in knowing probably, and then knowing for sure and having evidence of them saying something.
Oh no, that's what I'm telling you. My boss is racist. I've heard him say things that are very, very, very racist. And I said, oh, okay.
Really? you know that for a fact?
Yeah, man.
Okay. And what was your response to it?
Say it again.
What was your response to it?
My response was nothing. I said absolutely nothing. I said, oh, okay. He said something that was very, very disparaging towards Latinos. Mm-hmm. Okay? All I'm trying to point out to you is Sterling ain't the only person in America that got racist feelings towards other people. That's all I'm saying. And I'm telling y'all, if I had to quit, I'd be quitting a lot of jobs. That's what I'm saying.
Hello.
I got a new caller. 951.
My name's Juan, and thank you for letting me chime in on this. And my sister and my brothers, I appreciate y'all letting me get a part of this in and out of me. I was listening because a couple of things from my background in terms of where he was talking about his boss being a racist. I'll go back to 2008 when my boss said, I know you and your people must be happy, that alluding to the fact that President Barack Obama was elected. And I immediately responded by saying, which people were you referring to, my American people, my family? And I knew where she was, you know, alluding to, and I immediately recorded it as such and reported it to our human resources because, you know, I thought it was off the cuff. Now, it didn't affect my outstanding P's in the subsequent years, and we're 5 years since that time. But the thing I am marked by is how we go forward, as you were reporting, you know, changes is about going forward. I mark it in the way my youngest son responded to this matter when it came to light on Friday. And he was listening, because I listen to MSNBC, you know, they got to listen to Rachel Maddow or Joy Reid or Melissa Harris Perry or something. So they hear about it. And the response he gave me immediately gave me the fervor to further this discussion that we are having here today, and that is, we don't have to stand up for a person like that, right, Dad? And I said, hell no, we don't. And you know what it made me realize is he's going to know his history, as opposed to my parents having to send me off to college to get an Africana Studies degree. He's going to know it from the basis of who he is and when he goes out to interact with Charlie's boy. And what I intend for this discussion in my household to reap is his ability to do it with the words that, you know, used to evade me and turned into a couple of fists and a couple of suspensions, you know, when Roots came out. But anyway, my point on the Sterling thing, to which I believe I may have come too late, I don't know if we're past the NAACP, bothered me the most in this whole situation. Because how you going to give the man 2 Lifetime Achievement Awards only because he cut a real nice check to cover up the fact that Elgin Baylor had already told us that he was a racist? That was my point.
That was part of my point. That's why I kept pointing it to how much money they were bringing in.
Yeah.
Follow that. Always follow that money.
You know, I love the little thing where you put up the pork chops. I mean, the pork ribs on the advertisement that got me here. Because I was like, they're gonna have some chicken dinners and fish fries too. I guess a crab cracker or something to follow. But the thing that bothers me more so than anything is they were set up to be a setup.
Right.
To me. You know, we won't get into the founders and all of the meshing of colors and how we still referring to people as colored. And we are definitely, I think, even a little bit, hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, beyond black. We are even African of the diaspora at this point, and we're listening to the president of the LA chapter. I'm out here in California, you know, talking about they prepared to forgive him. They prepared to see him write another check.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, don't forget he's about to get paid handsomely to sell the team.
He's going to
get, you know, $500 million don't sound like I don't think this is the same discussion we would be having had it been a brother saying, you know, I'm only going to hire black people and I'm going
to
institute a
I might be going ahead and cutting that check for $300 million, but, hey, I might be able to buy the team and see if you might take my smoke.
Yeah, okay, we'll see.
We'll see, huh? Well, you know, it's kind of interesting.
I got $20 on it.
I hope the people that they're talking about collectively get past their egos to confide in a way to make it black-owned. I mean, we've had some attempts, and that 1.5% share Jay-Z had wasn't shit. And then you got Nelly had a little bit in Denver, you know,
okay,
but he sold it back.
Hold on, brother.
Now,
hold
when
you
talking about
name?
Go ahead.
What's
Juan.
Your name, brother? Huh?
Juan Ferguson.
Check this out. But buying that team, how much is it? Can it go ahead and help black folks? If the NAACP was able to squeeze money out of this cat, you know, they should go. Somebody should go ahead and squeeze money out of this cat to go ahead and do some real stuff in the neighborhood. Don't you think?
Oh, most sure. Most sure. I mean, if they only gonna get 2.5 to give to a collective NAACP's, and they're going to mix that up, so it ain't going to be like $1 million going to the NAACP. It's going to be like the Latino support network or whatever. And it's that 2.5 going to get divvied up to be like 20 G's a piece or something, you know. It ain't going to be much.
Right.
But in terms of the black leadership that I'm talking about coalescing to get ownership of this team, it's going to be the new NBA what was the brother, the Duncan brother, Johnson, Larry Johnson was rapping about with Jay-Z. They wanted to create a black league, you know, when they were talking about the strike, you know,
right.
The NPA.
Right.
I can't remember all of the specifics, but I know there was talk about that. But that would be a step in the direction that would get the money into the community that I see.
Okay, check this out. I've even seen a few posters and stuff. I went to the gym a few times, and somebody put up a little poster about an all-white football league. And I was like, hold on, man, what the hell? So these leagues are out here. They're out here. They're out there. So you go ahead and create an all-black league. I don't think nobody should shun that at all.
I don't either.
Look,
I mean, they will.
Because we have to realize now this thing is happening, and even on the conservative shows that I've listened to, is this whole reverse racism thing. It's like now it's so heavy that you're hearing so many white people. I mean, even with my comments and just, you know, my videos and stuff, and so many, you know, but so many white people are telling me, you're so racist, you're racist. And when I'm listening to these shows and stuff, they talk about that, about how
racist black people are. But we can't be racist. The key inference is that's my teaching moment to let them know what the white supremacy notion to racism is so that they can understand their white privilege.
But we fed.
They don't
want to
hear
us,
that, though.
But a lot of us feed into that we can be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole crab in the barrel came out of the, you know, field versus house nigger mentality anyway.
So when we get a lot of misguided, misunderstood, and non, there's a big difference between education and intelligence. And, you know, some people get their education and they assume their assimilation versus being intelligent enough to use that to help lift up the rest of the black community. Where I'm saying I'm hoping that the group of people that are black that own the team, should they get it, understand the complication of what I'm trying to explain here in terms of the intelligence. They will have to look at Eric Holder making the biggest swing at trying to free our black man out of prison without ever saying, "I'm freeing black man out of prison." You see what I'm saying? In a similar way, we need these people that are going to own the team to invest in the black community, because ultimately with this so-called reverse racism and the banning of affirmative action, and that's going to become nationwide in the next few years should this thing continue to get some ground, that we're going to have to employ and rectify in our economy the, what is it, $2.1 trillion that we command as the 40 million that we are, in a direction that actually nationalizes us beyond any of the borders that we once used to tear down with these so-called black Republicans and people that fall on the fence.
I hear you.
Hold on. But here's something that see, what you just said makes sense. But, you know, that amount of money we pour into this economy. But the problem that I'm seeing is these opportunities are not marketed correctly. Okay?
Correct.
And I think there's a lot of times you got one group want to go in and do this, another group want to do this, and then there's an animosity because they know it's all money. So I think a lot of time to try to unify a lot of these smaller groups to go ahead and create a bigger conglomerate to go ahead and deal with this issue. Y'all agree?
Well, see, that's the thing is black people, we are so fractured, you know, when it comes to all these groups. Like you just said, all these groups, because we have a lot of, you know, black people who do believe that we are post-racial, and you trying to convince them of something that is beneficial for black people that does not include white people, they're on that same line of, that's racist, okay? These are black people saying this to other black people. And then you have some people who are just about the moment. They are about what's going on. They live in the moment. They live today. They don't think about the future, tomorrow, the children, and so on and so forth. It's about now. They want to turn up. They want to have a good time now. Then you have black people who have...
It's one of those things where we go ahead, we can say it is unbalanced, because we got more of these people who are for going here, showing up and doing saying something right now and want to go ahead and go hang out later on.
Right.
Right.
That seems to be the biggest thing that's clouding.
To me,
I want to
just go ahead and be, because eventually those people that are out there, they're so lost, they're still looking for the truth. And what we're talking about is the truth, not from a sense of a religious aspect. I know a lot of people may even feel it spiritually to some level in their passion, but the truth that I'm referring to is the fact that nobody got us like us. When you go out there and purport that, that ends up coming back to you. Now, they're going to try you. They're going to actually try to defy you first. You know, they're going to call you foolish. They're going to call you crazy. But all of those ingenious ideas came out of that type of ideology. So as we continue to educate, like I was saying before, by saying this is what we're doing and we're unapologetic about it, it's going to scare a lot of whitey. But the thing that I know more so than anything is it's going to empower the black people that are in search of themselves, and they looking for somebody to actually stand up. Like we used to watch them brothers when, you know, they got behind Ali. You know, I'm now old. Oh, I'm sorry if I'm telling on my age. But I remember how, you know, it was kind of tough on brothers back then to still be wanting to be in the status quo and the athletic adventures that, you know, we now are talking about making the millions when there was just thousand years back then.
But, you know,
my dad.
That.
Go ahead. Yeah, because my dad at that time was driving
We called him Driving Miss Daisy because the movie Driving Miss Daisy was out, and I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. And he retired from working for Raybestos Manhattan for like 43 years. And he came out and he was working for this lady down at the Battery, which is where the Civil War started. And I was mad, man. I was like, man, how you going to do that? He was like, you know what, son, you misunderstanding the point. The real thing I'm doing right now is, do you have clothes on your back? Do you got that car that she gave me to drive in? Do you have, you know, the house around you that's paid for? But then I don't quite understand what I'm doing wrong in this instance, because I get a chance to educate her as to what a proud black man is, because that's the way I carry myself. He also says something else that I think is interesting, and God rest his soul, was the integration of America was going to be the disintegration of black America. And damn if that ain't happening.
Absolutely. I am all for resegregating. That's one of my major beliefs. You know, and integration, I mean, it completely ravaged us because we are so assimilated. I mean, we are beyond assimilated into this culture, and we have adapted all of these things that we think are good or that are like them, but they're not good for us. They're not working for us. We don't really have any real identity that we maintain from, you know, our original culture. Nowadays, the family history and all of that is not being passed down. We're dealing with, you know, single mother cultures for 40 years. You know, we have that complete breakdown.
Sorry. Go ahead. I apologize. I got my son talking to me. Go ahead.
We have that complete breakdown, you know, and to me, yes, when we integrated, that is one of the worst things. And so we're trying to catch up. See, black people, to me, a lot of us, because we are so assimilated, we are still running, trying to catch up to them. And we're still trying to get in their good graces. And we're still trying to say the goodness of white folks. You know what I mean? That they're good-hearted and they're kind-hearted. And it makes me think about people, when you were talking, it makes me think about people like Tommy Sotomayor, who put white people on such a high pedestal and will say so many awful things about the black community. And we're constantly in this thing of they're better than us. And that's one of the saddest things, and I'm all with you when you guys talk about the people who are ready. That's my belief, too. The people who are ready, who have the mindset to move forward, we are sick of this situation, we want better, and we know we can do better. I'm with that. We need to move on it. But we have to also realize that, man, we got a lot of people assimilated.
Well, you know, the way I figure we could do that is to start with our children. Like, I started a rites of passage program in Chicago that I brought out here to California, and it didn't really dawn on me until the president got elected, and I'm glad to hear him finally acquiesce into some degree about the, I forgot the name of his low boys program that he wants to institute.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact my children are not going to be handed the torch like when they're 30, 35. That's about when I really got, you know, a little bit holier than thou with it. And the Million Man March had popped off in 95. I was 28.
Ooh, you are old. No, I'm
just kidding. So I was well on my way before as being a man, before I realized the things that I needed to do in my manhood to help uplift my race. So what I'm saying is, from high school, I want my brothers, my little sons, to understand the concept is not just merely the nationalism that keeps them maybe segregated from their white friends and stuff, because I think for the most part, they're young. They're 7 and 8, so they still look at if Johnny Cool with him, he's a brother. But you mm-hmm. know, you gotta deal with that as it comes. But in terms of what they will understand about their history in terms of fighting, they learned a lot today. I mean, that story I just told you about rallying around Muhammad Ali, it was kind of beautiful to share with them the pictures and the stuff I had on Facebook about who these people mm-hmm. were. And they saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar up on MSNBC. I was able to flip back and say, hey, man, that was Lew Alcindor at Power High School. You know, he done came and revolutionized Milwaukee, and that's where my sister lived. And, you know, so racism crazy out there. They got a crazy governor, and they're trying to do away with the unions. I mean, they won't understand it all. But
that's
the truth
beautiful.
Is they are introduced at 7, whereas my dad didn't. My dad mostly spoke with the rod and his hands. He worked hard. And, you know, if I acted up, I got beat down. There wasn't no discussion like we having right now about how are you going to uplift the race. Because I don't think for 1 minute he would have thought his, you know, sons would have gone on to Ivy League education and a doctor and all that stuff to be able to make that kind of a difference in the broader community until, you know, my brother graduated from the Citadel in 73. So, you know, it wasn't really something that we politically thought of until, you know, I was, I guess, 7 at the time. So, I mean, I grew up pretty much wanting this to be a little bit better than the cockamamie story they're trying to run in the media. And more importantly, I wish the president was all black so that he could know why it's a big difference for him
right.
to come out and demonstratively say, you know, yada, yada, and it have that weight of, oh, he must be a communist socialist, about to be the Antichrist, real fervor to it because it sounds so black. But
mm-hmm.
now I'm going to get into differences as to where I wish he would take it, as much as the beginning started a lot more yesterday than 2008. And
mm-hmm.
so I'm just trying to carry it through to fruition so that in my lifetime I can say something more than I seen the first black president elected. I actually saw my son marry a sister, and they got me some grandchildren on land that's
right.
pretty much an all-black neighborhood. That's what I want to see.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, that, you know, when we talk about assimilating, you know, something I want us to understand is that we can be successful and live in black neighborhoods and be amongst each other. We don't, you know, we don't have to have them, so to speak, symbolize our success. And I think if we were able to do that more, that we would have better communities and neighborhoods. Because, you know, if you're constantly making that comparison, you're never mm-hmm. going to feel good enough, okay, because they
exactly.
have a head start on
right.
all of these
exactly.
things, you know. That's
hold on a minute. Hold on a minute.
You agree with Sterling?
Hold on a minute. We're going to go into overtime, so let me come right so we can go ahead and take a breather.
Can't see your face, can't hold you close. What good would heaven be?
pray for me, I tell them no.
Mike was on to something. He was trying to warn people about a lot of stuff coming up. Y'all know that?
Mike who?
Michael Jackson.
Oh, word up. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Okay, I was like, whoa, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, he said Mike like.
Yeah, Michael Jackson was on to something, man. You know, I think what was interesting is he had gotten so out of the bubble and was in the cosmos so far. I think he left a part of himself behind, is why it was hard to have people follow him.
I've seen interviews where Mike was telling people that, hey, look, you know, the Jews are the problem. You know, this Donald Sterling dude is a Jew, ain't he?
I believe so. I know he's a Democrat, and I believe he was alluded to in that conversation we heard.
He's Jewish. He's Jewish, prominent Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mike was trying to warn y'all about that a long time ago. And even the people that's involved in that record deal and him going on that tour, a lot of them was Jewish, weren't they?
Yeah, in the conversation, you know, Sterling was saying how black Jews are treated over in Israel. He made
right,
that point.
Right, That's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
He was saying essentially, you know, nothing he could do. You know, people stick to their own group, their own clan. And that's the issue.
Well, he was talking
here.
About them Ethiopians that, you know, you've been seeing stuff maybe on Facebook a little bit about, right? And
yeah,
how the black.
Yeah,
you know, do you know that they're sterilizing the women from Ethiopia?
Huh?
The Israelis are sterilizing the women. The African-born blacks, they're sterilizing them. The American-born blacks, they're telling them to leave Israel.
Right. They refugeed quite a few. Remember the guy from Chicago that took a lot of brothers to Israel, claiming you know they had the rightful heir to the throne because they or whatever, and he basically rounded them up and put them in a, like a internment camp. Him being Netanyahu.
Right.
Mhm. But what we were talking about before you gave us that interlude. I think, you know, is really the broader acclaim to what we is bigger than just us talking here today that has a major appeal. The harder thing is the unity. You know, I put up a poster that I used that said unity is stronger when it's trying to be broken apart. And the harder thing for us to really show, and I can go back to Denmark, Bessie, in my hometown, a Charleston.
Okay, wait. Let me ask you a question. So do you think things need to get worse before they actually get better, before we realize what's going on?
Well, I know it's going to get worse. I just alluded to the fact that we are living in the last days of affirmative action, and it really wasn't an equalizer for the effect of getting more blacks jobs and educated. The key thing it was set up for, which was its moral obligation to white people, was the fact that they were admitting that they had held us back and they didn't want to apologize for it. They didn't want to give us reparations. So the only thing that could possibly level the playing field was to assure us access to things that were denied due to Jim Crow and all the other laws that came after slavery that we had to have. But this is a new civil rights period that we're living in right now. So it's going to get worse because of those people we alluded to that are either wanting to sell themselves short and assimilate or don't know no better or will get a kick out of aligning themselves up with their white counterparts, Clarence Thomas, while, you know, getting their pockets tight while holding us back. Kind of, those people we're going to have to figure out. And I'm trying to use less language like we got to kill them off or they're going to die or whatever because people get scared of that kind of language. But the truth of the matter is they're going to have to be moved out of the way as we assemble the nationalism that I'm talking about that my children could enjoy in this lifetime. If I can live to be 100,
Clarence Thomas, he's making, you know, he's a judge, but He ain't talking to black kids, really. You know, you don't really see him talking to black kids.
No, but he making a buku loot off of Monsanto. He used to work for them. He was a lawyer for them. You know, he making buku loot off of, you know, the stuff that his white Tea Party wife be pumping and got all these militias jumping off to kill his ass if they could. But, you know, they deal with his ass because they need him to continue their Clive and Bundy's and stuff. So,
you know what?
You know,
I played some of that interview with one of the militia dudes earlier in the show. And I don't see the NAACP coming out against these cats here. So what do you think about this Clive and Bundy dude?
Oh, man. I really think, you know, he amalgamized, he put together under an issue that white America was looking to assemble and make Fox and Rush Limbaugh radio talk show stuff to say, hey, see, the government really is the enemy, and this is the reason why we need to lessen government, blah, blah, blah. He hit it on the head with, you know, being able to get together all those militia folks from all the way from Michigan, they're from Tennessee, Texas, you know, they're from everywhere to come and make sure he eats this doggone cow food for free and not pay back his $1 million. Now, to me, I think this is what's needing to happen, and it may be under some closed doors assembling this way. The sheriff's department, which is buddy-buddy with his ass, needs to be the one serving the warrant. They need to be backed up by the marshals because this is an unpaid debt to the federal government. If that was you and me, there would have been none garnished my wage. I work for the government.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't quite understand why they wouldn't be threatening the imprisonment of Clive and Bundy. And then as you deal with these fools that got guns pointed at so-called peace officers, they still made me paranoid. I don't know why we call them peace officers. But these policemen, as the threat to the same tyranny that they accuse the government of and throw the book back at their ass. Now, if that don't happen that way, the only thing I could automatically assume is, well, racism is alive and well, and where they at, Nevada? Because this happened before. There was another guy back in the 80s who did the same shit. He took a bulldozer and said, this is my land, get up off it. And all they was on was their feet, and they just kept backing up and back. And I was like, what? Man, let me go with an unpaid parking ticket, and they want to put me in a warrant when they pull me over for speeding the next time. What in the world is this? So Clive and Bundy amalgamized the white Tea Party racist ideology to a head so that they could say, hey, look, if you ain't truly, you know, for this white supremacy, then, you know, you need to back up. Because right now I saw some stuff on Rachel Maddow where they infighting with each other because some of the men was falling asleep on the low post. They got around the Clive and Bundy ranch, and they took an oath. They call them the Oath Keepers, so the Bundy Oath Keepers. And so they was saying, you know, hey, man, let's go to the hotel and kick it because the government ain't coming and all that stuff. And the real security force of the Bundy camp, them real Klansmen, was like mad at their ass, like, I should shoot you in your back for this high treason that you. And I'm like, treason? That should sound more like the damn Stalin socialist tactics that they. 155,000 Russian soldiers got killed when they deserted back in World War II. So what he's talking about employing under patriotism ain't nothing but socialism that they accuse him, the same president that they think is the Antichrist. So,
right.
Man, Clive and Bundy's an ass.
Yeah, they, you know, a whole lot of stuff don't apply to them. You know, they're just making up the rules as they go along. And they got a tight network, dude. It's a lot of them. And they all tied to a bunch of other. And we don't see that by going ahead doing this nonsense. Like earlier, we were talking, when the sister was talking, she was talking about, you know, that being human thing. We can't go ahead and keep saying we all humans and stuff when these people are doing what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I sense, my brother, that a few short months going into the 2014 election, that we will see what America is really prepared to deal with that type of stuff on, and if they actually switch the, even with all these rules to get people not to vote and all this stuff going on, I think if we could get to some level of parity where the Democrats are soft, so it's not like we could rely on them to counter all of this white insurgency, you know, that we see on the right. So even though we may have voted this brother in with the droves of 93% of us voting for him, that in and of itself will not get us to the point where we can listen to reparations and black nationalism and still have a conversation.
Wait, hold on. I think a lot of us are really missing another opportunity here. Over 97% of the blacks that voted for Obama, right?
Right.
Shit, you got to figure out a way. It's about marketing. We have to figure out a better way to market the idea of doing stuff for ourselves and getting that being the nationalist. We kind of see the urgency of trying to get a black man in there to go ahead and help out with the situation. So we got to go ahead and flip that message. That message ain't getting out there. It's not. We don't have a real strong tool to go ahead and fix stuff up. You agree with me?
I agree. I mean, we had the brother in Mississippi, Lumumba.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name right now.
I know you're
name,
talking about. I can't remember his name either.
Right.
And that whole, he had it
going, brother. Man, I got a friend who's from that district, and it just sounded like what Detroit needed. You know,
right.
It just sounded like what D.C., you know, could use a little kick in the ass and get. And then the way they took him out, and we almost feel like it was a drone strike, the way he just up and died like that. It's kind of like what brought me out here. I came
right.
because of... a brother named Ron Johnson. I'm in L.A., California.
Let me ask you a question. What's the town? Carson, right?
Yeah.
You know about the female there, the lady there, she's the youngest mayor across the country. She's black.
Compton. Yeah.
Compton.
Oh. Yeah.
But she's also talking about, hey, look, she's sick of the drones flying over Compton.
Well, yeah, because they didn't ask her to do that. That was something they had to find out about that on the fly when they wrote the check. Like, what this going to? And then all of a sudden, they realized the shit is on them. And I don't agree with drone technology and all that stuff. But what I'm saying to us, in effect, is if we could do a grassroots something that actually Harold Washington, okay, there's another good inference, and all these brothers die so young. You know, I can't, when I was about to tell you about Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson started the Rites of Passage program that ended up giving the truce to the fight that broke out, 22 years ago yesterday, on the Rodney King verdict. Okay, and got the Crips and the Bloods to at least put down their arms so that they could sell a crack and drugs on a even plane and try to everybody make money or whatever they did that caused them to at least calm that shit down for a minute. Now, he goes to Virginia to recruit some federal money, and a double sensei in karate and jujitsu at 48 drops dead in 2002. My whole... I work with the Department of Children and Family Services. My whole ideology of what we were going in there and doing with one church, one child, recruiting black families to be foster parents so that they didn't have to go into integrated homes and give more cultural awareness programs with rites of passage programs. All that stuff just was like supposed to be laws. And now I'm here 16 years later and realizing, okay, I got a boss who's going to tell me and my people must be happy because, you know, we got a president. And I'm like, well, you know what? I don't have to stay in the system in order to right this ship. You see what? And they're getting the better of my talents for a couple of $1,000s anyway. So why not put this effort in the creation of a better system that's not just church-affiliated, not just blowing off hot steam, kind of, you know, because that's the way I started out, was just somebody to chief with, and my brothers wanted to get those Crucial Conflict and R. Kelly folks and Common folks to come to a table and help these young brothers. And that was cool for a minute.
Hold on a minute. Brother B.A., you still there? Black Achievement?
Everybody hung up. It's just me and you.
No.
What's your name, brother? Are you?
Because I had a question for him. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I'm chill. Yeah, what's up, Rob? Yeah, I'm here, Chef.
Brother, you're an educator, right?
Right.
So, you know, what would be a good decent program to go ahead and help change a lot of these young brothers and sisters around? What do you think would work? You gonna teach them history? Some science, how much it is, how much of that. What program would you put together?
Oh, man. Ooh, okay, for the black man. It has to be very, very intensive, okay? It has to be all of those things. You got to teach brothers some skills, some trades, okay? Got to learn how to be a plumber, electrician, carpentry, landscape, all of that, right? And then you also have to teach them the academic portion, history, civilization, science, math, so they could focus also, if they so choose, in going after that long-term educational pursuits like dentistry and engineering and PhDs and history and all those things, okay? It needs to be all-encompassing, but it has to have that rigor. It has to, meaning that the system has to treat the students the way I treat my son. I'm mad his ass. I mean, I'm tough on him. You know, I am. I mean, you know, in order to get the best out of them, because this world is, you got to compete, man. It's competitive as hell, particularly for the black man who ain't. You know, we trying to get our resources together, okay? And a part of it, we got to learn how to get out there and take it, man. They ain't giving it. You got to take it.
That's it.
You got to take it. So my thing is, it's not necessarily the lack of programs, although we could have more. It's the intensity of the effort. You can't be soft showing. You can't be talking all nicety nice. You know, that ain't gonna work. You see, you have to be just as intense as the football coach, if you will. You know, football coach be all in your face, cussing you out. You know,
I had a drill sergeant, so
I'm just saying that there has to be, you know, this is serious business here, man. You talk about the future of a people.
So was my drill sergeant. Oh shit.
You was Marine or Army?
Say that again.
You was Army or Marine?
Let me end. Army, okay. Let me just say this, and listen. What I'm noticing, what I've seen over the last 10 years, is just the opposite takes place, particularly with respect to black men. Man, we treat these they soft, that they're emotionally fragile. You can't talk because you'll lose them. They say to me, "You gotta be nice. You gotta play into their game. You gotta." I'm like, no.
Right.
And what I'm seeing, man. When we talk about relationships, interpersonal skills, I'm going to tell you, man, on the one hand, I'm looking at the big picture, and I see it. But just on the intrapersonal relationships among black people, oh, man, let me tell you, man.
Yeah.
If we were just among ourselves, man, we'd be killing each other. I'm telling you, man.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, Rob. I'm telling you, brother in California, L.A., and system, and then, I'm telling you, I know for a fact we'd be out with machetes going after each other.
For a number of reasons, man. Yeah, the ignorance that actually creates that environment is what'll do it the most. Is why I'm so troubled with it, because I look at the young sister in Chicago here this weekend. She was organizing the nonviolent assembly of folks that basically, I think they conjured up, I think, $1.8 million worth of donations to try to do some of the stuff that you were asking about needing to be done. And she was gunned down in front of her house. And that was
Wait. You're talking about the one, she was leaving a fundraiser.
Right.
That sister? I forgot her name.
Yeah. I mean, that just happened.
Yeah, she was leaving, and somebody shot in the cop next door.
In the front of her house. I mean, and so my whole thing about what the brother just said is what's troubling about saying, hey, we need to get these Uncle Toms and stuff out the way. Well, guess who's going to be the one that's going to be trying to get the people trying to make a difference out the way is us, too. And how we get them recruited to turn the gun around from us to them is really the secret that I need to unravel, because I listen to these militia folks and stuff, and I'd be like, man, if I had these the two-key mentality to get these brothers to turn the gun around, turn the gun straight out there is the shoot, you know, is the target. Not you, not your own heart, not your own legs, not your own arms. You're going to cut your hand off to spite your face or your nose off like faith. It just, it didn't, it don't be making sense to me. And I know for my wife or my family, that's their concern for me because they know how I feel about the situation. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to pop off and I'm going to have Whitey wanting to kill me. I'm going to have Blackie might want to kill me. And instead of it being the message that I'm trying to send, which is I'm trying to uplift the human race by making sure that we do not denigrate my black race to do it. That's all. That's all I want to support. And so with the rites of passage thing, what I tried to do with them is I had them have the, I worked with the 12 to 18-year-old mix, and it's kind of like Boy Scouts, at least the concept of getting the older generation to help out the younger by giving them certain vestiges about manhood, scholarship.
Hold on, brother. What city you in L.A.?
I'm in L.A.
So what's the name of your organization?
This is something I started in Chicago when I was on the north side in Rogers Park. I had a grant through a Title IV-E grant that the government had out there, and under Clinton. Clinton was still in the White House then to work with at-risk kids, they called it then. And so we had them underwrite it at 75%, and the rest were my donations that I got from people like R. Kelly before he started messing with kids, and Common, and we had Crucial Conflict. I don't know if y'all remember that rap group. They was kind of big on the west side. And, you know, the house music dude that just died used to give a lot of out. Yeah. And people. And Al Sharpton came out to our launch party. I mean, so there was a concentrated effort after the death of that young brother, that basketball player had died, to do something. And then, you know, the Million Man March came along, and I heard this brother Ron Johnson speaking on the quad, and I said, you know what, we could do this. And so I had
So how far are you into it right now?
I just got the 501c3 status, the nonprofit status for here in California. And so if we are able to open up a chapter in Charleston, where I'm from, it'll at least have a national appeal. At least that's where I'm going to market it, to try to have it get some more legs to it. Because most black educators, like my brother on the phone right now, they're behind something that ain't, you know, the punk ass Boy Scouts. I'm no pun intended, but I'm just saying they aren't representing what I'm talking about in terms of the nationalism that we want our young brothers and sisters. Because I had it gender specific so that way when they got together for the little rap sessions, we would have them like we had Poor Righteous Peaches and the different rap artists come and lay their lyrics down for the kids that we had these black bookstores on the south side. You know, Chicago's a black city once you pass Fifth Ave. You know,
I live in Chicago.
Oh, right on, man. Man, we're going to have to talk. My boy lives in Calumet City, and that is one of the founders with me. I'm going to have to put you in touch with Chris. But, Nubians United, we really want to get Nubians United to be something that actually gets some legs, because it really will come from us educating these young brothers with the tools to respect themselves so that they can respect these sisters, so that we could get our communities back to the level that they... I think I put out a feeler question in one of my blog groups or whatever about why is it that we move out of our neighborhood in an effort to be safe, and yet it's that neighborhood that needs to be resurrected from the ashes to rise the phoenix of our children that is going to fly. And you know, most people will be like, oh, well, you know, we're just doing it the way the Jews did it, or the Kings of New York did it, and, you know, or whatever the case may be. And that may be true to an extent. If we didn't have the crab in a barrel and the jungle mentality of people that just make you go, well,
you know the jungle mentality is there. There's a whole lot of wildness going on over there. Hey, Sister Renee, you still there? She probably stepped away.
I'm here.
I wanted you, you know, that about that degenerative behavior. I want you to talk about that a little bit.
About the degenerate behavior?
Yeah. Within our
people. You know what? Speaking of that, that's why I was over here quiet. I see that YouTube took down my video for hate speech. And I guess a bunch of gay people, because they left me all these messages. I guess a bunch of gay black people, like, flooded them with, whoever seen it, flooded them with, it was hate, and they talked about they reviewed it, and yeah, so they took it down for hate speech. I'm like, okay. Right, yeah, I'm going to put it on Facebook, but, and we'll see from there, but, you know, that's run by gay people anyway, but that video is speaking on the specific behavior, degenerate behavior, sexually, that's going on right now, that's being, you know, promoted for the black community. And the video mostly deals with gay black men and, you know, the sexual behavior and things and where we got this from. And a lot of gay black people, I did the video because I did some other videos, and people kept telling me, gay black people kept saying, well, we didn't get this from the white man. Why are you blaming the white man? Or they were saying something like, you know, there were gay people in Africa. It was like they were so quick to try to explain away, you know, this behavior and say that this was in Africa and all this kind of stuff, still protecting, you know, the dominant society. And so basically I broke it down, you know, that the black people who are here in America, the ones of us who our ancestors were slaves, we were forced here, we were brought here, we were put in captivity, okay? And we know the women were raped, you know, we saw the results of that as far as mulatto, you know, children and so on. But the men were raped too, okay? Now, these people who, if you can go and enslave a whole group of people, a whole, you know, ton of people, you will do anything to those people. You don't care. You don't. They're property to you. They're trash to you. They're not human. So we have to understand that. So I talked about how they had butt breaking, you know, which is where they would take, especially the big masculine black men. And especially if they were at all in any way resistant to what they were told to do or whatever, or even if they just wanted to do it. And they would have his son, his firstborn son, if he had one, they would put him in the front row, and his wife or his woman would be out there, the other slaves could be out there, and they would he would have his guys or whatever, and probably other slaves hold him down, hold the slave down, the big buck, as they would call him, and he would, you know, he would sodomize him. You know, he would anally rape him in front of everyone. And so these men are already, you know, broken. They cannot protect their women and their children. You know, they're already enslaved, already forced into all of these kind of things. And so now you're taking away their manhood even more. Hello?
I'm sorry, it's my children. Y'all be quiet.
But you're taking away their manhood even more. Yes. And so, you know, I spoke on that, and I said, this is where all of this kind of stuff came from for us who are here in America. You know, and I talked about how they would also take black men, the ones they wanted to deal with, and definitely black boys, and they would dress them up in women's clothing. They would dress them up in whatever the women's attire of that day okay? And then they would have sex, you know, sex with them, make them perform sexual acts, you know, all that stuff. And I said, wow, it's very sad today to see all these big old buff black men. And I constantly tell black women, be careful of these big muscle bound guys, because a lot of them, those are the ones who are gay as hell, okay? And a lot of them put on that facade to look like they're tough or masculine or whatever. And that's also an attractive thing to other men. And because, honestly, women, we're not that crazy into all of that stuff like that. And so you have to be careful. But to see black men who are dressing up like women, are, you know, doing all this stuff, they're doing it to themselves now. But the door was open. And see, once that perversion came in the door and it got into our community, into our ancestors, then a lot of that stuff began to pass down, you know, with molestation and different things going on that we try to keep quiet about. But we had a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse done to us as a community, a lot of sexual abuse, a lot of sexual abuse to men and women of our ancestors. And so my feeling is, you know, now that we have all of this, you know, this whole gay agenda or whatever going on, is that black people, we need now, for men and women, for a long time I would just say it was men, but for women, definitely now too, we need to gain some sexual discipline.
Amen.
We need to gain some self-respect and some decency, because we can be arguing, we can be fighting, we can do all of these things, but we will still be having sex like it's going out of style. And, you know, now you have a huge number of black men who are in prison. You know, a lot of these young guys are getting put in there on mandatory minimums, so they're having to off the bat do 10, 15 years, going in at 17, 18, 19 years old. They get in there, and once you're in there, you get into behaviors in prison, you know? And I can remember just doing a lot of research about this because I'm doing a documentary on it, but I can remember seeing things where guys were saying, you know, I had a wife, I had my wife, but I had a quote-unquote wife in the prison too. And so when the wife would come up, they could go visit their wife, but then afterwards they'd go on right back to their other wife. So a lot of black men who never in a million years would have done anything homosexual, they get in there, you know what I mean? And that door is open. Once you open Pandora's box, it's difficult to close it. So then you have men who get back on the street, you know, they get out after 10 years, 15 years or whatever. They get out, they go back to their woman, their girlfriend, whatever, where they get a new girlfriend. But that door is open now. So even though
Do you have that video still up?
No. I'm going to put it on Facebook. But, yeah,
okay.
You can't access it.
What's your name?
My Facebook name is Renee Bass. My YouTube is Mrs. Legit, MRSLEGIT, the number 816, all one word. And I have other videos on there if you want to look at those. But
Renee Bass or Mrs. L-E-D-I-T?
No, Legit, L-E-G-I-T.
Oh, Legit. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad. Because I love the way you were pontificating on the Greco-Roman influence. The flipper, a deep thing that I was given my brother back east about the term clipper. That's the term of the slave ships that were made to go fast to get from the Congo when they was trying to, you know, keep the Portuguese from some of us were still fighting back. You know,
right.
they they just speak of the Ghanaians and how they were woefully, you know, putting us into the coffers. But and the clipper ships were the ones that were able to just, boom, get across the straits and then on that path right to Charleston. Charleston sold 75% of the slaves. But anyway, and you're so absolutely right in terms of that indoctrination that they gave to the loss of their manhood and how they infiltrated us in those many ways, and how that has, you know, I hate when I hear that term, you know, gay, the new black and stuff. And you know, that there's no, it's convoluting my blackness with something that ain't me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want to go there in terms of them trying to paint me as misogynist or homophobic or whatever the case may be, when all I'm trying to say is rightfully so, let's go all the way back when Constantine made it Christianity. And he got a chance to get to the universities of Timbuktu and so forth, and he sent all of that stuff to Plato, and then that's how they eventually get known as the Enlightened Ones, because, you know, their white friends that had, well, in Greece, their whole ascension was based on their low homophobic, low bathing club,
and
all that stuff that was going on. So by the time you get to the 1400s, when they started, it had been centuries of them doing this devilish shit. So by the time you get to the part where, you know, the infiltration into our communities became normalizing this behavior, it just, to me, it sounds awfully peculiar. And going back to your question, brother, when you said it doesn't have to get worse for it to get better, I'm saying it is going to get worse.
Yes.
And it's not just from the vantage point of more Donald Sterling's coming out as much as how we as a people will disintegrate, going back to my dad's statement, before we come back to unite. And that's my hope. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
That's my hope, that by doing rites of passage programs, where you have gender-specific information going to our young black brothers and sisters so that they understand when they come together, it ain't just so that they can bump and grind as much as it is to politic and build a new nation. You know, that to me would be, like, so gold. Because, okay, you were talking about the abuse and stuff. Man, let me tell you something. The stuff I just dealt with today, busted a meth lab, these people are Latino and white. And they had the little 3- and 4-year-old boy and girl living under the stairs, feral, in cages, barely could speak literally, enunciate properly, while my worker is sobbing and crying to me, and I'm working from home, so I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to get that one to the hospital. We need to get the parents went off to jail, of course, because of the meth and so forth. Mm-hmm. And all I was thinking is, man, I hope we got to them in time.
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't even a black-white issue. That's just human being stuff there, is why I know for a fact that if we do not concentrate our effort, the stuff that's going on over there in South Central is going to hit an all-time. The stuff that y'all be seeing on the news, it's just like me watching something that happened in the Bronx, and people feel so far away from it that they have no idea that kind of shit don't even happen in Manhattan. You know what I'm saying? And unless you're from there, you know what I'm saying? You don't have a relativity to it. You don't relate to it.
Right.
But
I've
been numb to a lot of stuff. Here's Chicago, right?
I'm in L.A. I lived in Chicago for 9 years before I came here. I've been here for 16.
Okay, so one of my restaurants was on Chicago Avenue near Austin. You know where that's at?
Near Austin?
Yeah, near Austin, Chicago and Menard. Now, you know, that ain't no nice neighborhood.
No, you ain't. You was over there almost by, God dog it, on the way to Oak Park and stuff.
So it started to get a little bit better at Oak Park. And my other restaurant was on 47th in Michigan. You know about that neighborhood?
Yeah, over there almost by Drexel.
That ain't nothing nice, now, is it?
Nope. You had
so
the University
I'm willing
of
to go
Chicago
ahead and keep
opening
my
street,
business in the hood. I know I can do better.
Okay.
By going ahead and trying to help out with doing some stuff. Well, most people are going ahead and running away from the problem. I heard one of y'all mention that earlier.
Right.
You know, when you talk about, like he was talking about the violence and everything is going to get worse. I mean, it definitely is. You know, I heard you guys talking earlier. I mean, it's definitely going to get worse for our community. And the thing about it is, my feeling is, with what I'm trying to do, I feel like people are kind of, well, black people, for one, we tend to be reactive and not proactive. So a lot of people don't really want to hear about this, but now people are kind of beginning to see it more. And I think we're not understanding that this one situation has the ability to do so much damage to us. So much damage. Because what happens is, when you put this is basically putting it in people's hands, right? Because then they get into this lifestyle and they believe this is who they are, this is how they want to live, this is what they want to do. And that's a dangerous thing, because now they're feeling that they're in control of what they're doing, even though someone else pushed this upon them, but they don't see it like that. And a lot of these gay black men, they fight me constantly about, you know, this wasn't put upon them, they're living their truth. But they listen to all these gay organizations, the propaganda from these gay people who are whiteful, who put this stuff together to make excuses for their perversion. White people will have any type of academic explanation for anything. They will explain away anything. They will explain away someone who is a cross-dresser and then had sex with an orgy and, I mean, whatever you can think of.
Man, I live in Hollywood. You know,
they will make
it's so pervasive. I mean, pervasive. In terms of the miseducation that they give on the topic. And the wild part about it is I see them pushing forth the transgender LGBT stuff, and they done surpassed. When I came here, I told you I came here to help the rites of passage that was going to be in every one of the 20 offices in the county of Los Angeles. And upon his death, the shit got cut off at 4. I'm trying my best to keep the thing going in my one office over there on the east side, over there by Pomona, P-Town, because we still got black people over there. But in between there and the valley where you ain't got nothing but a white concentration, they acting like we can't have it. But guess who's in there the most? 33% of the kids in DCFS is black. We only 12% of the population countywide. So tell me where the disparity is. Man, y'all, I'm so sorry. I got to cut this off. It's a pleasure talking to y'all. I'm sure we're going to do this again, but I know I need to get my kids to sleep, and they're calling on me everywhere I turn. I try to go to a different room. They back in my face. So, hey, man, one love, okay? I'm going to check y'all out on the flip.
All right.
Peace, bro. All right,
y'all take care.
Hey, okay, so you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, now that I got you all alone, I'm just tripping. I ain't gonna mess with you. Your videos, I mean, they took them down for hate speech. I'm trying to figure out.
They took this recent one down, the one I had posted up earlier.
The recent one?
Yes. Did you ever watch it?
No, I didn't get a chance to because I had to leave out.
You needed to see that one. That's what you needed to see.
Oh, yeah, the one I was saying about the title.
Yeah, you saw it then.
I didn't see it. I couldn't pull myself because of the title.
That's right.
Wow.
You needed to see it.
I can
send it to you on Facebook. No, you
don't know.
Those
things are hard for me to take.
But this is what's wrong, Seth.
Wait, hold on. I'm beyond that, so I don't need to see no more. I'm convinced. I know it's messed up. I'm like, ooh, this, oh, man, look at that. Oh, my goodness.
But see, we need you straight black men. We need y'all. We need y'all in this fight. And
you got me, but you know, I don't need to see what them fuckers be doing. Come on, I don't
do it. I understand that, but sometimes you do. Because
no, I don't.
But look. Some of the pictures and things that I try to put up are like, reality. This is like stuff they really participate in, because
I've seen enough.
I know what you're saying. But some of the people, not you, but some of the people who do watch it, are like, whoa, because they don't really know. Because you know when you hear the gay people and the gay organizations, they try to make it sound so sweet and nice and innocent, and we're in love, and you know, two people who
now
care for each other.
You know what I'm saying?
But that's what they say. I mean, that's what they say. You know what I mean? They want to try to show you somewhat of a positive image for something that's so destructive. So that's why, you know, I like to put the real images that are shocking, but they're real.
Mm. Yeah, they're shocking. Yeah, they're shocking. And they be shocking the shit out of, like, oh, okay, oof.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to take this. I don't know.
No, I would need therapy after.
You're right. But, you know, we need you. We need you straight black men. We need your presence. We need y'all to try to get to these young guys.
Oh, man.
Get their head on straight, because they getting with these older gay guys and they turning them out. They teaching them about this whole gay lifestyle. That's what they do. They have people called their gay fathers. And this is very well known and widely done in the gay black community. They have gay fathers, gay mothers, and then there's your gay sisters and brothers. And they have, you know, their own group. And the gay father is the more masculine of a gay man. The gay mother is typically a transsexual. And,
wait, you're making this
you know,
up.
No, I'm not. No, this is 100% truth. 100% unadulterated truth. This is not made up. This is not. This is for real. Yes, they have. I'm gonna have to try to get. If you want, I can get you a gay person to come on your show. It's a couple of them that agree with me. And they're like, yes, you're right. It's not easy to hear. But I want, you know, one of them who's very honest, and they can tell you about these things.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know, for me, you know, I would do my best to go ahead and accept it. I got some mental issues that make me go ahead and say shit almost like Tourette's every now and then. I've been fucked it all up. I've been pissed it off. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe. Mm.
Yeah, but they said I had hate speech.
But you put the video out and they said it was hate speech.
They said it was hate speech. And in the video, I didn't say anything hateful. I told the truth. I didn't say anything hateful. I said, this is what happened. This is the way things
went. Where does it say it's hate speech? You know, you tell me what you put there, but how did they deem it as hate speech? They give you some specifics on what exactly was a hate speech?
No.
And then they didn't talk about
no.
your amendment rights to being able to go ahead and blah, 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 simple talking crap in public. They didn't talk about that?
No. I'm going to appeal it, but no. And it just said on there that they had complaints or whatever. My video was flagged, which I know it was several of them who flagged it. And they said it was flagged, and then they reviewed it.
Did they tell
and
you?
When they reviewed it, they determined it as hate speech, and they took it down.
Mm-hmm. 30.
Mm-hmm.
That's nasty.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that one you had up there about... Hold on, I'm trying to fix my face to say it. Boy, that one there, that one, remember?
What?
Boy,
that
one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't say it. Not good to say.
Okay, but yeah, this one was so good. I'm telling you, this one was so good. And it was just too real for them because in this one, I'm telling you, I had some real, real pictures. I mean, real things that they were doing. And I show all these events that they were at. It's nothing but black gay men at all
of these
events.
Your video was deemed hate speech, but you showing these people in there that wasn't deemed as pornography.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't say anything about it being, sexually suggestive or anything because I had put an age restriction on it. So they didn't say anything about that. They said hate speech. That's what they said.
Speech.
Yes, they didn't say anything about it being, you know,
okay, which line in the video would you go ahead and say would be considered hate speech? They might think was hate speech.
You said what?
Which line in that video? Which part of the video would you think would be controversial?
The part that I know would be very controversial was when I talked about the white gay gay pride event and how black men then adopted that behavior that the white men were doing at gay pride events, which was completely outrageous. And now they take that on. And then I know they really, really, really were hurt because I talked about the type of sex that they have. I talked about anal sex.
Oh.
I had a illustration, like a cartoon illustration of...
Oh.
Some things, you know, it was like showing. I can't. You'll have to see it. You'll have to look at it.